So welcome everyone, Yehudi Geber with Jewish History Soundbites. We have a very special episode today. It's their interview episode. We're here with Rabbi Dr. Aaron Rakefet Rothkopf, long name, and a long list of accomplishments. A author of numerous books and Sfarim, including the best-selling The Silver Era about Rav Lazer Silver, a very incredible and wonderful biography also of Rav Revel, whose Yahrzeit is this week. Countless popular Sfarim on various topics. He has thousands of Talmidim around the world, many of whom still listen to the twice-weekly Shiurim. Also spent years working for the Mossad with special classified missions in Russia. Maybe we'll declassify some of that. You'll get to hear a little bit about that. And many accomplishments in Chinuch and Rabbanus. And
as a result of Chris Kollel and yours truly, the whole army policy with missing in action has been changed. And that's the most fascinating story of all. And although I'm under a security clause, I'm allowed to speak about that aspect. Generals of the army spoke about me on Galei Tzahal. So, Baruch Hashem, but don't talk about achievements, because I want the Ribbono Shel Olam to know I have a lot more that I want to achieve.
Okay, we hope to accompany with that also as well. So maybe we'll take a step back and we'll start off. You'll tell us a few general things. Maybe start off a little bit about your childhood in New York and a little bit about what the world was like that day.
Childhood in New York is very simple. I'm only sitting here because of a gentleman named Sempo Sugihara, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. I'm a third-generation American. My parents were born in Harlem. My father played sandlot ball with Hank Greenberg, who lived around the corner from my father. And we would have gone the way of all flesh. Actually, I found out many decades later, I had very big yichus from my mother's side. I'm a Calvaritsky, so that I relate to the Rosh Yeshiva of Hebron as a cousin, Rabbi David Kohen. He's a Calvaritsky. Rabbi Dov Revel, the founder of Torah in America, is a Calvaritsky, and there are others. But that I only found out many, many, many decades later. And I was in public school, and the teacher told my mother, you know, growing up in the Bronx, a third Jewish, a third Irish, a third Italian, two-thirds Catholic, one-third Jewish. And I was a wild kid. And the teacher says to my mother, your son has a Jewish head. He learns very quickly. He doesn't belong here with these Italian kids and Irish kids. Why don't you send him to a parochial school where he'll have a dual curriculum? Minishamayim zikuni, that the only yeshiva in the Bronx was Israel Salanta, and it was five little blocks from my house. So second grade on, I'm in Salanta. Well, the teachers then, they really weren't Shomer Shabbos. These were people who tried to make a living in America, fell flat on their face, lo yitzlachnim, but they learned Gemara in their youth, they could teach. They weren't a living example. They were great Zionists, and they did give us a feeling of the beauty of a Jewish state, fighting for it and then seeing it born. However, in seventh grade, I come face to face with new Rebbeim, people who didn't speak a word of English. I barely spoke a word of Yiddish, and my entire life changed. I'll mention Reb Gershon Yankelevich was my seventh grade Rebbe, Reb Hanukkah Fishman was my eighth grade Rebbe. These were the Shanghai survivors who Sempo Sugihara saved. And that's why I'm sitting here today, plain and simple. After elementary yeshiva, I took the exams for Bronx Science, like every good Jewish kid with a good head. I was accepted for 4 years. I got letters from them. They're so stupid. This is my that they thought I was actually there. 4 years I was getting letters. But Reb Henoch said to me, no, you're not ready yet to leave the yeshiva world. I wanted to be a medical doctor. And he said, no, ich halt, as du darfst gehen zur Talmudical Academy. I hold you should go to Talmudical Academy. He arranged an exam. I had missed all the exams. And I almost flunked the exam because I come in and there's Reb Mendel Zaks sitting there giving exams to Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law, long beard, black clothes. I never saw that before. I'm trembling. And I read the Gemara, and then he says to me, Zag abissel rasi. And I didn't know what he say, a little rasi. What is he talking about? And an older fellow in my book, by the way, I traced who we, Rabbi Arnolfsson, couldn't believe I located him and what he did with his life. Rabbi Berman whispers to me, he means Rashi. I don't understand. Alitva, Greta Yiddish, Asin, Nishtashin. And I said, the Rashi and the Taisvis. And I made the second level of Shayurim in Talmudical Academy. I have to say, between later in TA, I went to Lakewood. I was overwhelmed by Rabbi Aaron Cutler. I actually had a very warm, I would even say deep relationship with him. He was Makarev, someone who was a devout learning Torah and wanted Libo Chushka B'Teira. And I wanted to stay in Lakewood desperately. But my parents were hysterical. I have to give college a try. I made a deal. I'd go to YU for 1 year. And if it's not good, I can go back to Lakewood. Well, my first college class in Yeshiva College 1955 was the first class Professor Louis Feldman was teaching, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. And he walks in, a Harvard graduate. He looked like some Greek, Latin character who he was the expert about. And he gave a class on biblical criticism. I have utilized that class. I would say tens of thousands of students have heard me speak about the Gilgamesh epic with the flood, the Hammurabi code, the Hittite code with Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach. That's all due to Louis Feldman. So I remained in yeshiva, but I had one advantage that many people don't have in this era. I never am negative towards any Torah point of view. I grew up, and I'm going to speak about this Thursday night in my book launch, my new book, my ninth book. The Rav strengthened this feeling. Halacha demands, commands, obedience, respect. Hashkafa is multilithic, and everyone has to find his own hue and configuration in accordance with his abilities and understanding and his physical, sociological, emotional, psychological makeup. And that's a great gift. And I'm proud to say I have students in Eda Charedit, in Agudat Yisrael, in Mizrahi, and to the left of the way I feel. I respect them all. I have my point of view. I've often said, and I've been quoted, and I'm happy to hear people quoting me, we have to help the Haredim come into the big world, because they're going to take over Israel, the birth rate and the Aliyah and all that's going on. But in order to take over Israel, you have to know how to run a country. I said, we have to help them. But at the end of the process, I don't want to see the Haredi look like Aaron Rakefet. I want to see the Haredi remain the Haredi. Remain what he was before. My lifestyle is for me. I have many grandsons have beards. What can I, you know, I'm happy, wonderful. I don't know if it's from Karayesta. Well, it saves time shaving, or one is a career officer. It's easier in the army to wake up. But they all, their beards, Kanain Hara. So this was my youth. This was my training. I have to give credit. It's an amazing thought that a little Bronx kid like myself, a third generation American, my mind, baseball, the Yankees, Joe DiMaggio. I mean, when I go to Yankee Stadium today, I still see Tommy. I see Tommy Henrik in right field, Joe D in center, and Charlie Keller, King Kong Keller in left field. It's hard for me to make my peace with the new type of baseball we have today.
Can you tell a little bit about that? Because on one hand, you are the Bronx kid who is famous in all your drushes for being a big Yankee fan. You have your famous Hespit of Joe DiMaggio, and you still keep that love and excitement today. And what did baseball do for you? And
well, you see, baseball, it represents your youth. And if you had a happy childhood, it inspires you your entire life. There's the Ramban, there's a famous Ramban in Chodesh HaZeh Lechem, Rosh Chodeshim, So the Ramban raises the question, why are the names of the month all Chaldean, Babylonian? Why not Hebrew names? And the Ramban says so beautifully, Mitchilah Ovdei Aveda Zarah Hayu Avoteinu, to remind us where we came from and to be proud that we came out of such an atmosphere. And look what we became, Am Yisrael, B'nai Yisrael, Kahal Yisrael. So you see, even though we've moved light years away from the Bronx, from Yankee Stadium, and the Magic's not here already 20 years, not a small matter, but it's good to look back and see, Baruch Hashem, I was Ani Rothkopf, and today I'm Aaron Rakefet. But never to deny you were once Ani Rothkopf. And I look back, Baruch Hashem, we had good moments. I can tell you one episode that captures my youth, the era, true story. My Rebbe before the Rav was Rav Shmuel Leizervolk. I had in my first 2 years of college. And Rav Shmuel Leizervolk was an Adam Gadol, was a Telzer, was a Gon Adir, the Sharei Toha, Kadshim Tarat. Nebuch, what Hitler did to him in Europe, he would have been Telzer Rosh Yeshiva. He learned B'chavrut Rav Azriel with Rav Azriel Rabinovich, the son of Rav Chaim Rabinovich. That was his Chavrut, the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva's son. He was killed by Hitler. Rav Volk was saved by YU, by what became YU, Rabbi Revel, who loved Telz because he had studied there. The only time he ever studied in a yeshiva was in Telz for only a term, they say. But he brought Rav Volk to America, but he never really Americanized, always caught between two worlds. So one time, the game, the Yankees, the season is beginning. And Boston, the Red Sox, this was the hated Red Sox, the competition, come to the Bronx to play the Yankees. So we had one kid in class. He was wealthy. What is Pshat wealthy? When transistor radios came out, he had the money. His father was a Rav, a YU Musmach out of the 20s, but he ran it. He was a businessman. He had a radio. So he sat in back, and at the board, they put on the board, Boston Yankees, Red Sox Yankees, first inning, you know, a box score. And they flashed up to the guy sitting near the board. It was either Jerry Chervin or it could have been Mo Berlin. These were Chevreman names, Zichronim Levracha. And on the board would go 0-0-0-1, the Yankees. By the time we davened Mincha, we had the first three innings marked off. So, you know, we were kids. We boasted around the yeshiva, but we knew what the Yankees were doing. It evidently got back to Rav Volk's ears because he had sons in the yeshiva. And we come in about 2 days later, and Rav Volk looks around the class, and he says, I'm living it in Yiddish, but I'll try to say it in English. If they would have told me in Telz that they're yeshiva boys that can waste their time with in the middle of learning to worry about baseball, ich hab das nicht gekannt, I couldn't believe it. And he says, this is the way you treat your Rebbe? I will not give a shear for you gangsters. And with that, he slams the Gemara shut and walks out. It was a put up. 1 minute later, Mr. Abrams, who ran the yeshiva, comes in and suspends the whole class. So we're downstairs. It's unbelievable. You see the American kids, so they listen to a little, like a baseball, what they're learning in shiur. It's just a second, you see, a zero or one. So Mr. Abrams understood that it's not right. So he told us, look, he says, I understand you, but your Rebbe was hurt. I would advise you to write a letter of apology. So we wrote a letter, everyone signed it. The next day we were allowed back into class, and life continued. But this captures the conflict. In my own life, people like you, everyone making a living here off the Americans coming, it's an industry here, you all owe me 2% the finder's fee. I'm the only survivor of the original faculty of the first school that exported Torah to the Anglo world, Beis Medrash Torah, 1969. I mean, it's unbelievable. But we began 10 students, go in dreams, and would have said, Ani, because you're beginning with 10 students, 1 million Americans will ultimately be affected. And it's an, but what was the secret of Rakefet, Rothkopf, Rakefet-Rothkopf? Very simple. He was someone who knew, I don't want to say I'm a gadol b'Torah, but Baruch Hashem, I have nothing to be ashamed of. Shas and Paiskim, Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch, Shilat and Tshuvit, Chidush, Psukim that I paskined, Lahalacha, Rebavah, etc. Spoken learning with the Rav, with Rav Avadia Yosef, with Shlomo Gorenshik, etc., etc. On the other hand, my baseball knowledge was a perfect combination for these American kids. They could identify. And and you should know that the kids I'm friendliest with until today, kids, they're all hitting 70. It's the Talmidim I taught in the 60s and the early years of VMT. Later, they become older, the Cruz Colel. They're not Talmidim anymore. They're my they're my colleagues. And if anything, younger kids I try to influence. Today, I walk into class, they want to influence me. Rebbe should have a long beard and pay in some black clothes and a gabay and a silver cane, etc. But this is baseball, nothing. I have a grand, let me bring it up today. I have my first great-grandson. I have many great-grandchildren today. Kanai and Hara, many. Baruch Hashem. My first great-grandson. So he's a big boy already. So I see him at a family simcha nupsharon of his brother. And he's looking at his iPod, and these kids are way ahead of me, what I know, what they know, 100 times more. I said, what are you looking at? He shows me a soccer game. So I tell him, well, I can understand that. When I was a kid, I loved baseball. I can understand. Then I say to him, Tagidli, his name is Yishai, Ma yoter chashuv, l'mol Torah o listakel b'kadur regel? And Mishak Kadoregel, and he says to me, it gives me that angelic look, Saba, Atayudeh, Lilmol Torah, Zedavah, Chi Chashub, Avachutz Likita, Mutali Listakel, B'Mishak. And then in my perfect classic modern Hebrew, I answer him, in Tshuva Kazot, Kanita Ote. Got it? You got to know modern Hebrew. You got to know slang. Safa Shukit. Slang,
right?
Modern Hebrew. All right, that's baseball.
Right. Amazing.
There's a lot more to talk on right. baseball, but we'll leave it at that.
You mentioned before a few minutes ago that you had gone for a period of time to Lakewood.
Right.
Can you elaborate on that period and your connection to Rabbi Aaron Cutler during that time?
Here's the story. In order to get into Lakewood, you had to go for a Bechina by Rabbi Aaron Cutler. I wrote this up in Washington. I was told by Lakewood people that my description of Rabbi Aaron is the most moving description that anyone has ever written. And his house was 2-3 stories up, And I figured I'm going to see angels in the house. I'm a kid of 16, 17.
This is before you went to YU.
I had to get... No, I'm in Talmudic Academy. Right. I'm either a junior or a senior. And I have to take this bechina to go to Lakewood, try out Lakewood. And instead of finding angels, grandchildren were shooting darts at a target on the wall in the living room. I was sitting, and he gave me a fahera bechina, and ichabayska chapta masha, and his eyes lit up like Sifrei Torah. No pupils. I saw Sifrei Torah in his eyes. I saw za ahavas hatera. Such love, and I understood already, here's Rabbi Aaron, all that he went through, all that he saw in Europe, and here's an American kid out of nowhere, and the American kid, Libo Chashka B'Torah. And all right, we went to Lakewood. Lakewood then was very different. It was, I would say, you walked in, you had to put a gas mask on of Lithuanian air, okay? If you didn't speak Yiddish and didn't understand the mentality, And there were the survivors. There were the Talmidim who gathered around Reb Aaron, who he was not just a Rosh Yeshiva to them, he was their father. They had survived with miracles, and you could see the confluence of what was and what will be. And Reb Aaron's Ibigabinkeit, his total commitment. I've often said in Gris Kolel, I'm only sitting here because of Rabbi Aaron Kotler. What does it mean? Who ever heard of Kailulim in America? All right, Torah of Das had a Beit Medrash Elyon, which was partially Hasidus already, but it was off the beaten path. It was in Muncie. It didn't create the ripples that Lakewood created. Rabbi Aaron said, America is no different. Emendaf Lerin and nothing else counts. Now, whether we agree or disagree, you know, college, university, it's not important. What's important is Rabbi Aaron put the message across that we have to achieve the highest level of learning. And ultimately, every yeshiva can call them. Why you? I can't count already here. I think there are four major kolalim, three in America and one here. Check where it goes back to. It's true, YU had a kollel in the early 50s, but that wasn't the kollel for Americans. It was Rabbi Belkin, the second president of Shmuel Belkin. It was Gemilat Chesed, the Europäische, the survivors who hadn't found a home yet in America. He made a kollel. Could they adjust? And once they adjusted, the kollel ended. It wasn't the concept that this has to be ongoing. Today already, there isn't a YU graduate on a level of learning who doesn't study in one of the YU kollelim. So, and this goes back to Reb Aaron.
Did you have a personal connection with Reb Aaron?
Yeah, no. I had more than a personal connection. I was a chutzpah kid, and I can remember arguing with Reb Aaron about Zionism, and I told him what I saw in Bnei Akiva. And by the way, my theory is had Reb Aaron come to Israel, he would have been in the Mizrahi world like the rest of his family. You can't deny what happened to the Meltzer family in the state of Israel. The first Hesdi Yeshiva is the result of Rav Meltzer's son in Rehovot.
It was essentially a Kletzk Yeshiva.
It was called Kletzk originally, but it was a Hesdi Yeshiva. Right. And Rabbi Yehuda Amital, the biggest Hesdi Yeshiva in Israel, is a grandson-in-law of Rabbi Sazam Meltzer. But Rabbi Aaron went to America, and I remember his answer to me. He didn't argue with me. He said, this is Mindafkein Vaita. In other words, it's not the ultimate Hashgafa. And I have to tell you, in Bnei Akiva, there was one gift that I got that you couldn't get anywhere else. And that was not to let money influence you. It was kibbutz adati. There was an education there that the Torah people, the Jewish people, mean more than anything. And that has to be your ultimate goal in life. And that I got from Bnei Akiva. Eretz Yisrael, Am Yisrael, I'll be Torah Yisrael, with all the sacrifice involved. And believe me, I came here 50 plus years ago. Was not easy. For me, it was easy. I did the same thing I did in America. I was in Chabad Sat Torah. But for my wife, to run a kitchen, to raise children, not to have an extra grush, you don't know what the economy was like here. You got to give Likud credit. It was a communist economy. And I was on the books. I'm teaching for the Jewish Agency and teaching for the State of Israel, Michlala. You're on the books. Everything else was off the books. You have no idea what was going on here. And it was not easy. But these were the seeds of encouragement and commitment and even gegebenkeit that I got from Bnei Akiva. And I think Rabbi Aaron understood that. It was a terrific experience. But also, on the lighter side, I've written about this. I'm an eyewitness. I don't have to give you any source. I saw it with my own eyes. Rabbi Aaron, when Kedusha was over, he turned around right before the Kel Kodesh Bracha was finished. And somehow, like it's a paiskim, an American kid, an idiot, went over to Rabbi Aaron and told him, Rabbi, in the Shulchan Aruch, it says you have to wait till I Kel HaKodesh. And Rabbi Aaron looked at him and says, I would have told the kid you're an idiot. Reb Aaron Kotler, Kletzker Rosh Yeshiva, you open your mouth, you're rebuking him, reprimanding him. This was Lakewood, this was Reb Aaron.
How long were you there?
Ultimately, it adds up to about half a year. I was there for 3 months, then I came back, and then I started Yeshiva College. And I made, there are people I knew there were, Bianca Leshiff, he's here in Yerushalayim, later his nephews went to school here in this building. An Adam Gadol, an Adam Gadol. A kid from the Bronx. I also think he was, I know his parent, his father had at Hunts Point Market in the Bronx. He had a stall, and he was an Adam Gadol, a giant. Later, when I got to know Aaron Lichtenstein well, I always thought of the two of them in the same camp. They had the same big forehead. I says, what a big forehead. It's an Adam Gadol, an Adam Gadol.
And they married cousins.
Rabbaran and Reb Yankel Shif, very, very special. In Lakewood, everyone spoke about Shlomo Kalbach. When I was there, he already had left. But still, he was a living presence, if you understand what I mean. There was Getzel Rosenblatt. He was the Baal Menagein. And I can tell you a story. Getzel says it didn't happen with him, but he heard the story too. He's not alive. He just died this past year. I have wonderfully, I'm talking about Kew Gardens Hills, the shtibble there, Keter Terah, that was Reb Getzel. He married a girl from Bnei Kiva from the Bronx, Telma Glicksman, someone I knew well from the Bronx. So I'll tell you a story. When Reb Aaron was in the yeshiva for Shabbos, which was quite often, of course, but during as many Shabbatot he was in New York, it was fundraising, Sunday, etc. So for Shalosh Shuddos, they would always introduce a new niggun. And they introduced this niggun on top of Old Smoky, covered with smoke, on top of Old Smoky, la 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 la, la 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 la, etc. If I had a voice, Kalisha, if I'd be a woman, Kalisha would not be Asa. You can get the message. So Reb Aaron loved it so he said, Nachamo, Nachamo. And some of the American wise guys were biting their lips, not to laugh publicly. But that way, the Europeans, you didn't know the difference. I hear and hear. Then there was Moshe Hirsch in the yeshiva.
He was
And
there with you?
oh, sure, I knew him very well. And he was always sitting in a corner and with the niggun, learning, learning. So when I came in Aliyah, I went to see him right away. I said, Moshe, what became of you? Reb Aaron wasn't like this. He said, no, you didn't know Reb Aaron. I knew Reb. This is like with the Rav. I hear this all the time. This one knew the Rav. That one knew the Rav. You didn't know the Rav. And I say that. I let them, Yisachaku Hanorim Lafanai. Someone sang Gesund. But Moshe Hirsch, you see, also Reb Aaron didn't succeed, that the Rav didn't succeed. Gudolus told me that Reb Aaron didn't succeed. Look at his son today. Moshe is gone. His son just came out in public. We all have to worship Allah. You're aware of that? That they have to go online to Arut Sheva or some other website. I think Chaim Shulzin and the Olamam Shel Charedim has it as well. He gave this whole talk of giving back the whole country to the Palestinians, and we all have to worship Allah. And this is a Jew with a beard and prayers. And God have mercy, what can happen to human beings? As Mishlei says, Reb Henkin has a big arichas on this, and the Tziv in the Sakdamata, God created man yashar, but what man does to himself is it's beyond comprehension. But there were other people in Lakewood, Weisberg, Yankel of Weisberg. I remember one by one, Reb Moshe Eisleman, the uncle, the nephew. They were living Sifrei Torah. Their whole life, everything. It was a breath of Lithuanian air. Today, you go back to Lakewood, it's an American institution. It's
You went to visit Lakewood
yeah,
recently.
no, it's many yeshiva dando. It's like Mir. I always say about Mir, it's a tent, it's a big, big umbrella. My own feeling is the yeshiva can't be more than 300, 400 students. Even when I go to YU, it's too many, it's too many. But all right, the world moves on. I have to.
Was YU less than 300, 400 students when you were there?
In my time, the whole yeshiva from first year high school through smicha, so you had about 500 students. It
Wow.
was not massive. I knew everyone from 1951 on. I knew every good kid in Reitz. The yeshiva was called Reitz. It wasn't the high school. When I was appointed to the faculty, I was appointed to Reitz. But in reality, later they split the high school, the college, everything is separate. The advantage of being all one unit was, as a kid, I met the giants of the yeshiva. I could be intimate with Rabbi Lichtenstein. By the way, I have to tell you, the one who influenced me the most to go to Lakewood, I don't think Lakewood or YU, I don't think we're proud of him, Dovi Hartman. Dovi Hartman was unbelievable, was a brand, was his story. His elementary school was Chabad, high school was Chaim Berlin. Then he went to Lakewood, and then he married. Rabban told him, Daf Chasnabni, had a girlfriend, you can't dilly-dally so long. And Rabban told him, so when he got married, he needed Panasa, so he came to YU, and he was an exception to the rule. He got smicha without a bachelor's degree. He did not yet have a bachelor's. He gets that later from Fordham University when he's in the Rabnet around the corner from Fordham University in the North Bronx, Northeast Bronx. And I knew Dovi. Dovi was a brand. But all right, what happened? I can still remember the Brit of Dovi's son, Daniel, and there's his old chaver from Lakewood, Shlomo LeKalbach, with his guitar. I can still see them in front of me winking at each other. And all right, that was a different part of Lakewood. But that's life. You right. can't succeed 100%.
You had the experience of being in Lakewood for a short time. You had a connection to Rav Aaron. You also are famous for being a very close Talmud of the Rav. The two, Rav Aaron and the Rav, had a connection. Can you describe a little bit the shaykhs, the connection that they had with each other?
I'll tell you one story, which you probably heard from me if you're listening to my shayurim, but this story says it all, that the Rav and Rav Aaron had different hashkafas is obvious, but the basic gestalt was one and the same. Now, there was a question came up, David Weingarten, who had Sharon tours. Castro was willing to let out some Jews, but the date he was letting them out was Yom Kippur. And David Weingarten calls the Rav. This goes back many years. You can figure out it's right after Castro came to power. And he says, Rebbe, can we take them out on Yom Kippur? Pikuach Nefesh? And the Rav says, call me back in 2 hours. Okay? Calls him back in 2 hours, and the Rav tells him, go ahead, take them out. It turned out that Castro didn't do this viciously. It was simply a mistake. He was dealing with a secular calendar, and when the question was raised, he said, fine, let them leave a day or two later. Years later, David Weingarten meets the Rav at a wedding. This is written up, David Garten, in his memoir. It's online. And he says, Rebbe, why did you tell me call you back in 2 hours? And the Rav said, Azaz Shaila, Yom Kippur, Chilul Yom Kippur, I had to be mitja'etz with Rav Aaron Kotler. So until I could get him, and I knew it would take a minute or so, I said, call me back in 2 hours. So I think that answers your question. The Rav raised money for Lakewood. When Rav Aaron died, you can show, I was about to say, you could check this with Schneer, but he's not alive many years already. To me, he's a living. I knew him very well. There was a Ben Bayit in his house, he and his wife. He will confirm it. The Rav went to his Balabatim in Maria, and they kept Lakewood going until Reb Schneer could take over. And the Balabatim, you see, Reb Aaron was a tragedy. The Rav became the Rav in America. You understand what I'm saying? Read Rakefet's work on the Rav, where the Rav describes his own life and why he loves the yeshiva. Reb Aaron was the Kletzke Rosh Yeshiva. In America, he lived off his chidushim of the earlier period. He had a 7-year cycle. It's busy fundraising. Stories are legendary. Go to a Bala bus, get a $25 check. The Bala Batim with the Schneer, they started to do tshuva. And as they say, the rest is history.
You said you knew Reb Schneer. What does that mean? You weren't in Lakewood then. How did you...
No, when I was in Lakewood, he was there. He was with Reb Aaron. He was a very edel, such a fine individual, Reb Schneer. Just edel. very honest. That we had discussions. He told me, I quote him word by word, that we were very close to our poem Mizrachi. He says, when I was in Israel with Rabbi Zalman and my family, we were very close hashkafa-wise. Again, it leaves open the question, what would have been had they been in Israel?
Reb Schneer was involved with the kletzk of his uncle.
At the establishment.
Yeah.
And he said to me, I'm quoting, this is exactly, we were very, Zayin Mintz, Zayin Hashkafa, and quote, end quote. And he also, I don't know if you know this, but this Reb Schneer told me, before my time in the Rav Shir, when Reb Schneer said to me, when he came back from Yerushalayim, his tata told him, go and hear shum from the Rav. And I think it was a half year, a year, whatever, he sat in the shir. So I asked him, was für ein Einfall hat das gemacht? How did it impress you? And he told me that, oh, the Rav is something unique. He says, but the Talmidim, he said, the way they were dressed, they were a little bit flippant. In other words, he was used to, I guess, from the yeshiva shevelt, yet I don't know how much he saw in Europe or what he saw in Israel. There was a different attitude. American kids are American kids. I don't think he would have been overly impressed with the kids at Chaim Berlin or Teir Vadas at that time, to put it mildly. But he was a very warm person, too. His wife, too, was unique in that respect. It was a beautiful couple. And later in life, like everyone else, one child studied here at the Gush, came back to his own family to study, and Nebuchadnezzar buried his son, 82. It was, 82 was, I think, when Schneer died, because I remember I couldn't go to the funeral. I was in Lebanon. I was fighting the war, the first, Milchemet Shlomo Galil. I have a war written for that. So I remember I couldn't go to the funeral. I was up in Lebanon. I was up on the Syrian, the road to Damascus. It was called the Syrian Damascus Road. That's where my unit was stationed. But it hurts, you know, to bury a child is not an easy matter. And they say that he never really totally recovered. They say the Rebbetzin was a stronger person in that respect, because she had gone through difficulty in China, you know, during the war. The whole time they were separated, they were engaged, she was ill.
She had typhus, yeah.
Typhus, and Rabbi Ashkenazi was responsible
right.
That the shidduch should continue. These were wonderful, wonderful people. And you see the children, Ramalkiel, there's a lot about him here in Israel, Zalopashut, but you see his youngest son, Reb Aaron Cutler, a financial genius. Look at Lakewood today. Why are you struggling to keep afloat? And the Lakewood, Baruch Hashem, who would ever dream that the Rav today would have to ask Lakewood for help, not vice versa. But all right, Kachi Daka Shochayim.
Right. You knew a lot of famous people, big Rabbanim. Did you ever have a chance of meeting Ramesha Feinstein, having a connection with him?
Of course. Oregon 71212. My Igrot Moshe has all over what I spoke and learning with him. I knew Ramesha very well. Ramesha is a different story. Reb Moshe, Azah Edelkeit, it's hard to describe you. You totally fell at ease when you met Reb Moshe. The Reb Baron or the Rav, there was a certain goyness, an Eluyshaft, that you knew right away you're approaching giants. Reb Moshe, Azah Edelkeit. Here I'll tell you a very...
Reb Moshe Feinstein was warmer than the Rav or Reb Baron?
It's not just warmer. You could approach him and ask a shayla. Women could call him and ask him, "Ven sint min Shabbos lich this week?" And he would give an answer, "Ven mevarech ha-chaydish, vasvat tegreb." They loved him. But my best story with Reb Moshe, and this is 100% true, there was a Talmud of the Rav who grew up on the east side, Rabbi Erwin Alpert, Roy Alpert, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. His father was a chazan. Reb Moshe knew the family. He was orphaned at an early age. Roy, his mother died. And these were East Side people. They took care of each other. And went into the rabbinate, first rabbinate, someplace in Jersey. Is going back 60 years at least. And as a couple, he starts asking questions. They want to get married. He's choshesh for mamzeret. He doesn't know what to do. Young rabbi. He calls the Rav in Boston. The Rebbetzin says the Rav is not in now. And but Roy says it's urgent. She says, I'll put you number one on the list of whom he has to call back. All right. An hour goes by, 2 hours go by, he doesn't get called back. The wedding is tomorrow. Calls Reb Moshe. The Rebbetzin answers the phone, and she says, Moshe, lekuma ha, chazan albit zun vilach, and with such love, and Reb Moshe gets on, how are you, and your wife, the children. They live in Beit Shemesh today, his two daughters, and his widow, Beit Shemesh. Wonderful people. And he asked Reb Moshe the Shaila. Reb Moshe says, Mein Sohn, Nema Reisa, Shulchan Aruch Ebenezer, Siman so and so, Nema Cook Don, Dema for, he goes back and forth, tells him, Nu was trachten, what do you think? Wie kann man paskinen? So, and Albert says, Ich denk man kann Mekel sein. And Reb Moshe says, Mein Meinen is Eich, dass man kann Mekel sein. Right? So, fine. 2 minutes later, the call comes from Boston. The Rav calls. No, I heard you have a big problem. What's the problem? No, what do you think? And he starts quoting everything he had just studied. And the Rav says to him, Albert, ein Sach ken ich sagen. One thing I'll tell you, I am Moyach is das nicht. That's not your learning. You consulted with someone. That's that Roy would always tell the story. But anyway, the Rav was masking with Reb Moshe, and they were both mekel. That was Reb Moshe. I had difficult problems with Tarat Mishpacha, with Shivaniki, and with doctors. Ach, Reb Moshe. I can tell you we danced for joy when the first volume of Igros Moshe appeared, late 50s, Orach Chaim. And I'll tell the whole story. Because until then, I'll give in Shmuel, says Reb Moshe, but yes, haben das in print, you can hold it. So I already knew the Rav well, as it was, must have been my second, third, or fourth year with the Rav. And come in, I bring in, I said, Rebbe, after class, you know, he would sit back, and the guys who were the wise guys walked out, but the guys who really held by learning wouldn't leave the room until they walked out with the Rav. So we said, Rebbe, look, your cousin just put out the... And we saw the Rav was not too happy. So we said, Rebbe, what's happening, Charibel? What's bothering you? He was very upset with Rav Moshe's psak with liquid soap. Rav Moshe said he held it was no lad. Nicht verstanden, was meint das no lad? And then he said, you can see the Rav. But all right, that's poskim. I have a tshuva from Rav Moshe. There's a tshuva to in the volume in Yoredeya to Aaron Yitzchak Rotkopf. And that Shiloh with the, I don't want to go into detail, it would take too long, but I had a good kid, I was a kid, you know, be make or pee. So I had a Shiloh with him. And so I came up with a solution. So I asked the Rav. The Rav was mefalpil back and forth. Week later, said, look, I can't reach a conclusion. So I wrote the Rav Moshe. I got it. I got the tshuva. I have it today until today. It's in Rav Moshe's handwriting. And it's later published. And I bring it and I show it to the rabbi. I wasn't convinced. I shouldn't convince him. But Baruch Hashem, that's the beauty of Torah. That a kid starts learning the first Meimatikonet Akriyat Shema Shalavis. Right or wrong, the first Mishnah. How many different opinions do you have there? Right there, you have three opinions. So I said, that's life. That's the beauty. You can. Anything I teach in the Kollel, right away I have to deal with this opinion, that, or I say halacha lemaisa, this is what generally people do. But this is what makes learning so beautiful. It's a challenge that the Rebbe used to say. He couldn't understand how anyone with some intellect couldn't enjoy learning. It's the greatest experience in the world. He tells the story. I write this up in my work on the Rebbe. So the Rebbe would often have the story. Rebbe Chaim had a Talmud who went off the path. He wound up in Berlin, wound up a great professor of mathematics. He helped Einstein, world famous in his field. And the Rav went to visit him. Could be Rav Moshe told him, visit, see. And the Rav walks in on him, and he's learning Gemara. And he didn't know the Rav was coming. He's learning it. So he told the Rav, he said, ich kenn sich nicht abreißen von dem. Here's a guy already so far gone, but I can't pull away from learning. I love it. There's an intellect. All right. That leaves us with a big problem. How do we deal with the Jews who don't have intellect, who are not so, I have to. This is why Hasidus is so powerful.
Which is interesting because lately, you know, a few years ago, why you brought in Rav Moshe Weinberger?
It's my Talmud.
BMT. And in the Rav's time, I remember once I spoke to Rav Heshi Billet. He told me that he came from a Galitzianer Belzer home, and the Rav made him into a Kalta Litvak. So in the Rav's time, it was a very Kalta Litvak type of place, and then YU brings in Rav Moshe Weinberger. There's a lot of interest in Hasidus today there. How in your opinion, of course, would the Rav have seen this whole bringing in Hasidus to YU?
I think the Rav would have been 100% in favor. My own knowledge of Hasidus begins with the Rav, with Tanya, with Likutei Torah. You know the story, the Rav wanted to teach Likutei Torah at the Yachid Kala in the late 60s in Boston, and Menachem Ganek stopped him. And the Rav, I write it up, it's written up in the Rav. And the Rav told him off, but he couldn't do it. He's already Atnish Tzaretni, he doesn't have who to talk to. But no, the Rav introduced us to Hasidus. And I've studied the Rav's family well. Rav Chaim himself said, we're not that far away from Hasidus. Even Rav Velvel, who was a very, I would use the word, a very stringent personality, okay? He also had Talmidim Hasidim. Some of them went on to become Rebbeim. Never rebuked them. No. There was not... Rabar in Lakewood is already anti-Hasidus, anti-Chabad, was very strong. Reasons why, Poshanagachetapara, I mean, we can go into this, it's a lecture, it's lectures unto themselves. Are you allowed to take halachic terminology in the Gemara and dashen it in a Hasidic fashion? Yetzahara, Keneged Yetzahara, etc. By the way, the sixth Rebbe didn't discover this. It's already in earlier Svarim. I once showed in Shir that there are precedents for that in Hasidus before. Today there's an entire book, Yishai, on Hasidus interpretations of Shas. And the most famous one of all, so you'll start to interpret it. When do we read Kriyat Shema at night? And Siddiq Rebbe got hysterical. That's the pshat. No, are you allowed to do that? And the Rav certainly had an openness and an understanding. And this was a result of his years in Chaslavich. And I know it better. By the way, in my new book, I have a whole piece on the Rav, on the seventh Rebbe, in this very volume I gave you. And I was there. I'm in a Shemayim. I'm sitting with Rebbe when he's in Shiva for his mother. It was 9 o'clock in the morning. No one else was in the house. I was there because I was already a Rebbe in the yeshiva and added, and later I would give a shiur, but I left my students to learn b'chavruta. No one was in the house. There's a knock on the door, and I write this up in Washington, I believe. Rabbi Jacobson and Rabbi Gordon come in. They tell the Rav, I remember word by word, The Rav Fashteit, that's the Rebbe Gegnish, the Reis from 770. Ob mir sein, sein Schluchim kumin Menachem Avil sein, the Rav. The Rebbe hat uns geschickt. And, ach, the Rav, his face lit up, and he broke into conversation with them about what he saw in his youth. When they left, and I escorted them to the door, I come back, and the Rav started talking about the Rebbe. And this, with my own ears, I heard the Rav say that what a difference between me and the Rebbe. In Berlin, no one knew who I was, where I was coming from, where I was going. Everyone knew who the Rebbe was, where he was coming from, who he was. And you saw there were heretics there. And there was a love and understanding. And to teach Tanya, to give Shurim based upon Tanya, which the Rav did, and Likutei Torah and Avarimkeit. Today, you got to go with the generation. I tell my students, they all know I have a private minyan Simchas Torah. My grandchildren organized it years ago. We'd start davening at 6. By 8:15, we're making Kiddush. To me, Simchas Torah. I go home and learn 3 Daf Gemara. That's Simchas Torah. But I understand there's a new generation. And the most important thing is to succeed. If we create Shmirat Shabbat, Kashrut, Tart Mishpacha, and an understanding of what it means to be a Jew, let it be through Hasidus. The end result is what's important. And I have to bow my head to what we call, let me correct you, not Hasidus Day, Neo-Hasidus. Like Rav Hirsch,
Neo-Orthodoxy.
And Baruch Hashem, let it thrive. To be like me, you had to have seen Reb Henoch Fishman. All right, what can I do? He's not alive anymore.
People like Reb Henoch Fishman are almost unknown. I mean, you had exposure to these Shanghai Talmidim who today no one even heard of. Like, you know, we learned in the Mir in Yerushalayim. We heard about, as a collective, the Altamirs from Shanghai. Mm-hmm. You knew some of the lesser well-knowns personally.
Reb Shmuel Feivrishevitz, Reb Geshen Yankelevich. Reb Henoch Fishman, but there were many more. Reb Noach Bornstein was not in Shanghai. He was able to get to Canada. He was well known. So from Kabay, he already got to Canada. But to know Reb Noach Bornstein, Reb Yeruchim Gurelik already, more well known. These were wonderful, great people, but Hatzalakot, the scars were there, what they went through. To a certain degree, you take Rabbi Yeruchim Gurelik, one of his sons wrote an article he never taught in YU. It's a Muncie publication. Said, occasionally my father came in to give Musa that the boys should leave the yeshiva. It hurts me because there are tens of thousands of Talmidim still alive who studied with Rabbi Yeruchim. How can you say this? And you see, that's a fadopmkeit. When you teach like that, you inculcate your students with a feeling that a white lie is okay. I don't know. I can't accept that. I'm a Talmud of Reb Yisrael Salanta person. You have to be honest with all the difficulty in honesty. But ultimately, truth and dedication went out. Reb Yeruchim was a character par excellence. He was in YU at the time. There were two names, the Rav and Reb Yeruchim Gurelik. Chaim Potok in his books writes why he left yeshiva. The Rav and Reb Yeruchim scared him, scared his wits out. He went to JTS, which is a shame for us because Chaim Potok was
talented,
very capable.
Reb Yeruchim Gurelik was more famous in YU than Reb Moshe Shatzkis or David Lifshitz.
He was volatile. Reb David was Reb David. The Tzuvalka, that's a edel of mensch, Reb David. The hands, the way he held your hand, Reb Shashatsky, Slum Sharov. But these guys didn't yell or shout. Reb Yeruchim was unbelievable. You know, the story with the girl, it's legendary. It would repeat itself every, because he was always the D-train. The D-train was under his window. And whenever you had to go to D-train. So in the Bronx, kids, Saturday night, they were going with a girl to Bnei Akiva. A kid was on a date, everything. And he would see the guy with the girl. and he wouldn't say a word. And the kid would be sweating. He'd come to school Sunday and he'd tell everyone, "Fellas, I'm dead. The Rebbe saw me with this girl. He's going to cut my throat off." Rabbi Yochum didn't see a word. Monday, the guy was shaking. Rabbi Yochum didn't say a word. Tuesday already, he was in shape. Didn't say a word. Wednesday, he forgot about, didn't say a word. Thursday, 5 minutes left in the shiur before mincha, exactly at 5 minutes to three, Rabbi Yochum suddenly would look at him, and every kid in the class knew what had happened. Shmuel, my ganzen Leben gesehen, so ugly I never saw in my whole life. No, when Yeruchim, but the guy walked out, he was slaughtered. They had 30 other guys in the class. Everyone's gossiping now. All Shabbos, well, anyone and everyone, all they're talking about is Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelick. He was a ball of fire, a great inspiration. But you had to take him with a little bit salt and a little bit sugar. You had to understand where he was coming from. We understand that in Europe, he also was a ball of fire. He was a public speaker, and there would be big machloket over the dean's reception. That's the classic story of the yeshiva in the 40s into the 50s. It was for juniors. And you came to the reception at the end of the years before you become a senior. You came with your girlfriend or your date. And the Reb Mendel Sachs was opposed, Reb Yeruchim was opposed, but the Reb was in favor. The Reb said, "Let them meet the girls in the yeshiva. Better they should bring to the yeshiva than says those treffen auf dem Gass. They should meet in the street." So one time in the hallway, the Reb and Reb Yeruchim were arguing over the dean's reception. And the Rebbe says to Rabbi Yeruchim, "Macha Schweig, be quiet. If you won't, Eib nicht, weil ich sagen, was du hast getan in Radnu, what you did in Radnu." So we never could find out what Rabbi Yeruchim did in Radnu. The worst we could uncover, we don't know if it's true, was that the movies came to Radnu. So he once walked a girl to the movies. She went in to see, and he picked her up 2 hours later and walked her back to our house. But we don't know if that's anecdotal or true. But we were, what did he do in Rodney? What did the Rav mean? All right, that was life. The Rav was Americanized. In other words, he was, he understood the American kids, Bnei Akiva, girls, boys, Maimonides. It's a different deck of cards. The Rav, more than anyone, but Americanized. He and the Lubavitcher Rebbe, they had deep insight in what's going on. How the Rebbe achieved it, I don't know, because he sat in a winkel and 770 Eastern Parkway, back and forth from the shul to his house on President Street, and yet he knew America, knew the world inside out. The Rav was in Boston. Well, you can draw your own conclusions. The Rav used to say that when I came to Boston, there were just three fellas over the age of Bar Mitzvah and under the age of 70 who were Shomer Shabbos, and they all became my brothers-in-law. Two married his sisters, and one married his wife's sister.
Amazing.
That's what the Rav used to say. That was a different exposure.
That was America then, and that was really a different world. So maybe in summary, to wrap this amazing session up, maybe you can, in your opinion, tell us what you think is the greatest challenge facing world Jewry today.
No, the challenge is building the state of Israel. Everything depends on the state and how religious, how Torah-tic the state will be on the public scene. And here you have a tragedy because democracy is very influential in the Western world. The Western world has no concept of what Torah is about. We are the antithesis of Western civilization. Western civilization stresses the dignity of the individual. We're all raised on it. Here, now, do whatever you want. Just don't break someone else's windows. Judaism, unlike Christianity or unlike Islamic culture, we as Jews have a dual existence as individuals. Adam Korav Eitz Al Atzmo. we're part of the Jewish people. Am Yisrael, B'nai Yisrael, Tahal Yisrael. And that also requires commitment, surrender, devotion. The Europe, the great world beyond us doesn't understand that. You're an individual, be happy. As an individual, what counts most is here and now. The food I eat for breakfast, lunch, supper, etc. As a member of the Jewish world, B'nai Yisrael, the present is the least important. It's learning from the past, preparing the future. And this is the state of Israel today. Could you imagine a party that puts on its banner? I'm not talking about Lieberman. That's way out. I'm talking about blue and white. Chilul Shabbos, secularism, buses on Shabbos, from Jews, a Chavrei Knesset, Charedi people, the woman, Gera Hasidah, Danny Trapper's son, Chili Trapper, Stern, the general. And they don't understand that the public thoroughfare, we're not, no one is in favor of going into anyone's house and telling them to be kosher. You don't want to be kosher, eat chazer on Yom Kippur. Ubachata b'chayim, freedom of choice. You want to be mechallel Shabbos, freedom of choice. But on the public sphere, if we're not a Jewish state, who are we? We have no right. We're only here because we're B'nai Avram Yitzchak V'Yaakov, because we're the continuity of the Zionist dream, of the Messianic dream. And here these people, we have not succeeded in educating them. You take a look at guns, it's a Satma Chassid, every generation before him. Anyone who survived from his family is living in Kiryat Yoel. Are you aware of that or no. Not? Well, you don't listen to the news? You don't read the interviews? Wake up. His parents came to us, became Mizrachistim, and he had a frum education till about 10th grade. And take a look. What would Yair Lapid's wife is the great-granddaughter of Rav Amiel, Avigdor Amiel, chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, who defeated the Rav for the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv in 1935. That's his great-granddaughter. I've caught many of her cousins. Kulam Shomrei Torah.
Started the Yeshivat HaYeshiv.
Yeah. Who are we talking about? So this is the greatest challenge today. Now, the world, and this, I don't know, I can't explain it otherwise, it's Hashgacha Pratit, the hatred for the Jew. We're starting to rival Germany of the late 20s, early 30s already, all right? We're not at 33, 34. But God have mercy, what just happened in England on the metro? I spoke about it in class where I differ with Meir Kahana that we cannot teach hatred. Arabs got to give the benefit of the doubt. You have among them people who risk their lives to save Jews like that lady. When they throw a stone at you, it's a different story. But we have to teach dignity and respect for every human being. Selam Elokim. But this anti-Semitism, what's happening in America, New York, Borough Park, Muncie, let alone Pittsburgh, can't be explained. London. And I think it's God is giving us a message. Go where you belong. And we need every Jew here to build a magnificent state and to help us create a state in consonance with the ideas, the devotion, the dedication, the Ibegegebenkeit that has sustained us until this day. When there's no Shmirat Mitzvot, when there's no Am Yisrael, Kahal Yisrael, the Jew does not survive. Every report, poor report, we don't need it. It's living history. We're here, Baruch Hashem. I function as an individual and part of Kal Yisrael. And next time we'll talk about Russia and we can talk about the Israeli army and living examples of Joe DiMaggio fans who were able to successfully live up to the Ramban. We don't forget where we came from, but we're proud where we are at today and where we are going, Be'ezrat Hashem. Chodesh Tov
U'Mevorach. Thank you very much. That was beautiful. Thank you, Rabbi Rakefet. Jewish History Soundbites, Yehuda Geber. You can reach me at ygebss@gmail.com. And thank you for that wonderful interview with Rabbi Rakefin.